ado, welcome to the One Fall Podcast. Joshua Adam, William Arbuthnot, the ultimate babyface, Joel Johnson, and I can never remember his nickname. It's something about charisma, but he's probably going to be more grumpy than charismatic. It's Mo.
That's accurate.
Yeah. So, the Royal Rumble didn't suck. It's been a long time, but it didn't suck.
Well, Royal Rumble's just the tip of the iceberg. This is. Have there been a crazier week in wrestling? Like, I know 2017 was bonkers, but has there been any week quite like this?
Not for a long time. I mean, it seems since Monday with Raw 25 that there's been a new story every single day. Some really positive, some Enzo and really negative, but there's been a story every single day. And some not even fully WWE noted, like the XFL, but WWE has not been in the mainstream media this much, I don't think, in a long, long time. They had mainstream press, and boy, did they take advantage of it this week. In fact, they are trending right now, and I know that, you know, they love their trends and everything like that, so we won't hear enough about that. Royal Rumble trends have outdone Granny trends this evening.
Holy crap.
Wow. Yeah.
So more people are talking about the big two stories from the Royal Rumble on Twitter than the Grammys. We haven't had the chance to watch the Grammys, obviously, because we were watching the Royal Rumble. I don't know what the big story is. I know Kendrick Lamar had a big performance and whatnot, but the two big stories from this are out-trending the Grammys right now, so well done to WWE for doing that, at least. They love their moments, and they had their moments tonight, and that's what we're going to get into. So, Joel, I'm going to let you
second, what's the second big story, out of curiosity?
Nakamura winning.
Okay, all right, yeah. Just making sure.
Yeah, on a global level, I think it's people that have been following the product. Let's just start there. Roman didn't win, and they had Nakamura win. And what was the best Royal Rumble since, I don't know when, Joel and I were trying to decide this, maybe when Ray won. But that was just everything you want with the Royal Rumble. You know, you had the right amount of comedy. You had really good surprises. With the three surprises were excellent. And you had intense drama at the very end.
Mo,
down to the final six, to the final four, to the final two, there was intense drama.
Mo, I can tell you, I was sitting in the room next to Josh, and he was pacing up and down. He was saying that
you were too.
I was pacing too a bit, but you were jumping all over the place. You were like, Roman's winning. Roman's winning. We should just give up. Roman's winning. There's no way they're letting not
I did
win.
Accept it. I did accept it at one point. I was like, man, he's going to win.
And he was going up and down. He doesn't give what they don't give what the fans want. Roman's going to win. And then when Nock won, we both popped. Because this was...
Yeah.
This is a guy that when you... Meltzer had said it best on his radio show that you look at where Nock was when he first came in with a Sami Zayn match to where he is now. They're two different people. And this is the first time you've really seen that Nakamura from with...
A little bit the Cena match, but that was a sliver.
Yeah, but right, so, and they made the right choice. They've already announced that he wants to face AJ Styles. They've already kind of spelled it out where they want to go with it, which I think is smart. You don't need to draw it out of who's not going to pick. It's pretty simple. So I think Vince likes money, and that's a money match. I know it's not going to close the show out, but I'm perfectly happy with it happening, because I think it is an important match, and you and me, Josh, have had a conversation about Jericho saying there's no more big dream matches left, really. But I think this is not necessarily the first time they're doing it, but to be at the stage that they are for the WWE title, I think this is a dream match that I think a lot of hardcore fans will really sink their teeth into. And I also think that casual fans can really get into this because of who these two competitors are.
Absolutely. And, you know, before we get, I know you're going to have your thoughts, Mo. I also just want to say, too, like, great surprises, like three genuine great surprises that I didn't expect, especially the legend. I did not expect to see Rey Mysterio, and he looked fantastic tonight. Anyways, Mo, the floor is yours.
Yeah, no, the Royal Rumble is just one big, long gimmick, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not a wrestling match.
No.
It's just a one long gimmick, and so it's a matter of, you can tell a lot of stories, one big story or a lot of sub-stories in there. And they did that. They did a good job of that this year. That's something that they don't always necessarily excel at, that sometimes they kind of just lose that. But I mean, Finn Balor had a story, right?
Yeah.
And it was really cool to see him. You know, he was the Iron Man, and he had a whole bunch of eliminations. And the guys, I mean, the one that really caught me off guard was the Hurricane. I was like, I rewound. Yeah. I was like, what?
Forgot about that. Yeah, it was awesome.
Ray didn't surprise me as much. I mean, you kind of be waiting for it eventually, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought it was great that it was in Philadelphia and, you know, and a place that was just a perfect place for him to come back. Mm-hmm. Nakamura, I mean, I kind of had a feeling Nakamura was going to win the whole way, even when it got down to Reigns. The crowd obviously hated Reigns, but Nakamura, the thing about him is, he was the biggest, like, his pop when he came out. I mean, Adam Cole was a big pop, people like that, Mysterio. But Nakamura, for the main roster guys, the pop, the singing afterwards, when it gets down to, you know, four guys or six guys, it's his name they're chanting. Like, this guy's incredibly over. And you almost don't know why, because it's not like they really pushed him really well.
Yeah.
But he's just, that's his reputation.
It's because Dodo pushed him.
Yeah, it's his, yeah. he's got that it factor, right?
Yeah.
It was really cool to see him win. I expected it. I think actually it's 50-50 that it closes the show at WrestleMania. I think there's a fairly good chance that is the last match at WrestleMania.
My only problem is the drawing power of Brock.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because once the event starts, you can. If he's already drawn.
Well, my question is too, with, and I don't want to get into too much, but with the other big announcement tonight, is that what's going to close it out? Because that's the biggest draw of WrestleMania now.
I don't think it's about the biggest draw.
Okay.
Like it's about the moment that they want it to be. Like that's historically, that's really more what it is. It's less about what the biggest draw is. It's more about what is the moment that they want to be the last moment going off the air. And they've done that now with Reigns, you know. And I don't think doing that with Reigns again necessarily is going to have a huge impact on him or the show. Having Nakamura and AJ tear the house down will be a better... And whatever that match is, you know, at the end, I imagine it's both of them, you know, celebrating each other like that moment, it'll be and the crowd going crazy. That moment will be probably the best moment. I mean, Ronda's match will be what Ronda's match is, right?
Yeah.
Brock and Reigns will be what Brock and Reigns is, but it's more about the moment and not about the. And in the past, that moment has been here. We're handing the ball finally to Reigns, and since they've done that now, you know, already. And it has been what it has been. Doing it again, it's good for him to be the guy to beat Lesnar as far as giving him a push and making him the champ. But as far as the moment, it's already been done. So I don't know that you go back one more time.
I do think it's the right decision, too, to have Roman beat Brock. I've been really impressed by Roman the last little bit. I mean, you know, everyone remembers the Super Cena stuff, and I think one of the things that did make me think that Roman was going to win is he lost more or less clean to The Miz for the IC title, and now he lost the Royal Rumble. And that's just something with Cena and Hogan at the height of their powers, they just want to do. So I got to applaud Roman for doing those two jobs right now. Like, and he's a great performer. It's just the way that he wasn't organically given to us, I think, is the way that we revolted against him. But just he's a great performer, and I think it's a great week for Roman Reigns that he did the jobs in both of those situations when it was the right call.
And the thing is, he's sitting in his seat back because he'll probably win the Elimination Chamber.
Yeah,
and then he'll
win
the title of Mania. So it doesn't matter that he lost these. In fact, it's good in some ways to lose these because it gives you opponents for down the road, which is what you need.
Yeah.
I didn't think he looked very good tonight. But, I mean, as a general rule, he's not the guy that the people had pushed down their throats before he was ready. That was the problem. That was before they were, before he was ready, and therefore it was before the fans were ready. And that's you're right. They haven't forgot. You both suck chance was one of my favorite moments of the whole show.
That was pretty humorous. But no, it's pretty awesome. We're going to get Nakamura, AJ Styles are going to tear down the house. Joel, any last thoughts on that side of the Rumble?
You know, the Royal Rumble, it was, I really enjoyed it. I liked seeing Almost. It definitely, seeing guys like Almost and Cole tell it, I don't know about you guys, but it makes me feel that Vince sees, like, those are guys that Hunter wanted to elevate, and Vince gave the okay for it. So Vince was curious to see what these two guys could bring, and I think that's really good signs for both guys. I was generally surprised to see both of them. The Heath spot was great. I love that with Sheamus. That was a great little moment where threw him in and then he clotheslined Sheamus. It's a Royal Rumble match, so there's going to be plenty of lulls in it, but I thought they did a good job elevating guys up and not just relying on how many surprise entrants you can have in it. They really
even the Corbin stuff, Joel. Hey, the Corbin stuff was actually good for his character.
Yeah, the way they had Corbin exit out of the ring and the way he laid everyone out. Rusev is becoming more and more of a star, and that's a good thing. You're elevating people, which is what you really need right now. Is you need to start bringing some of these guys and have them reach for that brass ring. Give them the opportunity to grab at that brass ring. And I think that a few guys definitely did reach for it. And man, seeing Adam Cole was incredible, because I didn't think that would happen this soon, but just to see it was a really cool moment. And I have no complaints about the Men's Royal Rumble.
I have one. Oh. I think the only thing I had a problem with was the Dolph use was kind of weird.
See, and that's the thing. The end of it felt a little flat with Goldust and then Ziggler. But
yeah, especially when you think of Lashley and Taker and those names have been thrown around. And that's ourselves. You know, we build that up. So, you know, it's kind of us as the fans to have that. Yeah. And that's where the Women's Royal Rumble we'll get to. That's where I thought they succeeded, is they had bigger entrances at the end of it. Where the men kind of fell flat with the Goldie and the Dolph.
Yeah, both of those were. But at the same time, you had a great story play out where you had kind of the new guard versus the old guard. And then you had the face of the company versus the internet darlings of WWE currently. And then you had it come down to the guy we want versus the guy we don't want.
Yeah.
So they had a simple story, and that to me is when wrestling's at its finest, is when you have that simple storyline. You don't need to make things complicated, just simple storyline.
Anything else from either one of you before we move on?
No, I'm just going to say that, you know, they brought in those two NXT guys. They also put in three new guys who they brought in and showed on camera at NXT TakeOver. And I'm not sure how quickly, you know, Almost or Cole is coming up. But I feel like NXT is getting really crowded.
That's what Joel and I were saying.
And they need to, historically, they bring up a lot of guys, you know, WrestleMania. And I feel like they need to bring up a couple before that, because I feel like it's getting pretty crowded at NXT.
There's a name that I'm really worried they're going to bring up. That's Velveteen Dream. I'm really worried they're going to bring Velveteen Dream up.
I wouldn't say I'm worried. I think he could use another year down there. But
oh, I think
I
he
also,
two or three.
I think he could use,
he needs to slow down the match. I don't want to get to the NXT side too fast, but the match with Ono was good, but he still has some stuff that he can learn, and he went a little too fast and needs to slow things down a little bit.
Yeah, but it's not like he's not going to learn at the main on
oh,
the main
of course
roster
not.
As well.
He's got everything else tied down. Like, he's a great package to have right now.
Yeah. I expected the guys I thought would be from NXT, I thought him and Ono were the two guys who I would thought were most likely to be in the Rumbles.
We were thinking Killian Dane and Eric Young. And then we were thinking Undertaker and Bobby Lashley, because Bobby Lashley had been put around a lot today, right? So
when I saw Raw 25, I thought that was Undertaker saying he's not going to have any more matches. Like, to me, that did not come across like a guy who's going to be at Mania and going to be facing Cena and going to be at the Rumble, any of that. Like, that promo to me was, and I know that that's the rumor, is that they want you to feel that way.
Yeah.
So that when he comes back, it's a big pop. But to me, that felt very real to me that, it's done.
Well, they could very well just do Cena and Elias, and then we could get Joe and Cena at Mania. That could very well be the direction we're going to go.
Could be, yeah.
So before we go to the next big story, anything else from the Men's Rumble, guys? No. Okay. The Women's Rumble. You know, we were wondering. We all kind of figured if it was placed last, we're going to get Ronda Rousey, and eventually we did. And you know, that's what we're going to talk the majority about. But I want to talk about the Women's Rumble itself. I thought, you know, there were some moments in it. There were some definitely some lulls in it. I thought there was a few misuses of the legends in it. You know, for the most part, I was entertained by the match, but there were some lulls and use of legends, and obviously this Kerry Zane spot was a little weird. Joel, I'm going to let you go on first on your thoughts of everything before the obvious bigger story of Ronda winning, of Ronda coming out. I mean,
so the women's Royal Rumble are really, for me, it's divided in two parts. The first part was kind of slow and meh. Then about, I don't know where it picked up, but it really started to pick up, and they really started to fire on all cylinders. So it's a story of two different Rumbles in this one Royal Rumble match. I enjoyed the second half of it. I thought it had a really good pace to it.
Me too.
I found the Kerry Zane... I wonder if that was a botch, just the way it kind of went and the way she reacted at ringside. You saw she didn't leave right away. It seemed very weird of how she was kind of going. And to have Dana...
And Dana to eliminate her.
Yeah, that just seemed a little out there. But the second half with having Trish come out at 30 was a good call. The Bellas, they are what they are, but they were there. Brie got a really nice reaction, but that's because of her husband. I thought Sasha looked good. I thought this is the first time that Sasha actually looked like an interesting character. It's been a while.
Throughout Bayley, which was a big, I think, that's a Mania match possibly.
Yeah, and I think Bayley, this is the first time that Bayley looked just, this isn't yet another, well, I can't say the first time, but this is another example. I don't think the company is, well, at least Vince sees much in Bayley.
No.
I like the spot with Trish and Mickey. There were a lot of nice little callbacks to stuff. I thought they did a good job with the second half of it, and I quite enjoyed it, and we'll get to the end of it, but for what it was, they picked the right woman to win it. It was the easiest answer.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Like I said, there's a misuse of some legends that kind of bugged me, but the second half really picked things up, and... you know, I thought they picked the right person to win. Would have liked Trisha staying a little longer, obviously, and we see maybe more of her and Asuka, but I thought the spots they had was right, and that Beth spot with Nia was really fun as well, same with the Natty and Beth spot. Mo?
I'd like to know the legends that you thought were misused. I'm curious.
I thought that Lita could have stayed in a little longer. I would have liked to have seen, I guess just... the fanboy in me would have liked to have seen Alita and Trish stare down, obviously. I didn't think Tori was misused at all. I thought she could have gone out earlier. I thought Molly could have been used a little bit better as well. That's really it.
Okay.
Yeah. And then also, I just think the use of Kerry Zane, if that was a botch or not, I don't really know what the point of that was.
I think it might have been a botch, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't thinking about it too much because, you know, I was surprised there wasn't more women from NXT. I think there was too many legends brought back. No Iconic Duo. No Nikki Cross.
Shayna Baszler.
And Baszler I can understand. But there was really only two women from NXT?
Kerry Zane and Ember.
Ember,
right? That's it?
And I think you could have had six or eight.
Well, at one time it was rumored to be nine, but it was more legends than anything. Like, I didn't need to see Tori Wilson. She's a very pretty pretty woman, but I didn't need to see Tori Wilson. I didn't need to see Kelly Kelly. They're not good in the ring. I would have rather seen Nikki Cross or Peyton Royce.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, Peyton Royce, Billie Kay, Nikki Cross, you know, people like that, I think would have been stronger to put in there. A better chance to elevate them. Get them seen by eyes. I mean, maybe this is a callback to the women who helped build the thing, but some of those women, I mean, Tori Wilson was not a good wrestler, as you say. She was.
No.
She's everything the Women's Revolution had to fight to overcome.
Kelly Kelly as well. Her. She could never run the ropes.
Oh, she can't run the ropes at all. And
no.
And so, to me, in a lot of ways, I thought, like, I'm watching this thing, and I'm like, the mistake is putting this thing on last. Because at this point, I'm not expecting Ronda. And Ronda is the point that's on last. Like, that's the main event. The actual Rumble itself, I'm like, it's too many people. It's exposing the women. It's exposing the ones that are still green on the roster. Like, you know, that aren't that good. The Carmellas and people like that, they're not looking good. And it's exposing the older women. Because, to be quite honest, they're sitting there and, you know, Marie Menounos at the beginning talking about how nobody's worked harder. But the truth is that the athleticism and the skill level of the 30 women are nowhere close to the athleticism, the skill level of the 30 men to make it to the Royal Rumble as a man is even, you know, it's more impressive. Like that's a higher level. And so if they had like 20, I know they want to do 30 because they want to make it even, but if it had been like a 20 women Royal Rumble, you cut out some of that fat and little things. I think you could have done a lot better. I think because even of the 18 women or whatever, 17 women with Alicia Fox not making it that are on the Royal Rumble that are main roster women, probably 6 or 7 of those, like Lana and, you know, a few others are the drizzling shits, right? And Sarah Logan, you know, it still has a long way to go. Like, it might be get good, but, you know, or, you know, Liv Morgan.
Well, it shows the evolution of shit, too. Like, it's, I would argue that Lana's a better wrestler than Kelly is. I could have done without Kelly, and I know she's a gorgeous woman.
We losing them there?
It's about... Are we good?
Sorry, losing you there?
You got me?
I got you, yeah. Who do we lose?
No one.
Joel?
Okay, go ahead. You're saying she's a gorgeous woman. Nobody's going to disagree there.
Yeah, I'm saying Kelly is a gorgeous woman, but you know who else is a gorgeous woman? Peyton Royce, and she can work.
Much better worker. Yeah. So, yeah,
even Aaliyah, who's, you know, she's green, but she could have got exposure.
Exactly. Like, it's one thing to hide, like, 7 or 8 women. It's another thing to have to hide 17, you know, which is kind of what you're in the case when you only have, like, a 10 or 11 women that can actually work. You know, Trish Stratus can come in and be better than 90% of the people in that ring. That's not a good sign, actually. So I think in a lot of ways it exposed them. But, you know, what wasn't about that match? It was about the post-match, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was actually kind of scary to me that Nikki looked better than some of the women that were in the ring at the time. That was a little scary to me as well.
Yeah. Bree didn't look good. Bree still looks like she has a... She still looks like she's a mother.
I'm not going to say anything. I will defend Bree. But the biggest story is at the end. Asuka wins the Rumble. The two champions come in the ring. At this point, Joel goes to me and says that a woman that has covered Ronda is died. And at that point, I'm like, okay, when's the music hitting? And then the music hits, Ronda Rousey comes out, she has a stare down mainly with Charlotte, slaps away Asuka's hand, and then has the awkward handshake with Steph. So the question is, and then ESPN now, Ramona Shelburne from ESPN, I should give Ramona Shelburne the credit, she also covers the Lakers, great reporter. We now know that Ronda signed a full-time contract to the WWE. What that means, I don't know what the full-time means, what the money is, what the years are, if she's getting the Brock money, the Brock's going to leave after Mania. And what the program is, I don't know. I don't know if it's Steph, I don't know if it's Charlotte, and I don't know if maybe they're going to do some weird four-way between all the champions plus Asuka and Ronda. But, Joel, you haven't talked for a second, so what do you think about all this?
This is a big deal. It's cut and dry. I'm not going to speculate too much because I want to see how this plays out in the next couple, the next at least 2 days. But the fact that they are getting this amount of media coverage for this is a sign that this is a big deal. This is important to WWE. I don't know who said it, but someone said you looked at Ronda out there and she looked so happy. She looked like she was quite enjoying herself. And this is just a lifelong fan that's coming out and doing something that I think she would enjoy doing. You can feel the passion. It's similar to Finn in the club. you see how happy Finn is with the club and kind of being that character more than anything. For Rhonda, this just seems like a really nice moment, and I don't know how this is going to play out. I don't know how Rhonda is in ring. I don't know how she's going to be on promo. This is going to be a very interesting experiment. With Brock, you talk about giving her the Brock money. Brock was a proven draw. Brock was a proven draw in pro wrestling. Yeah. He's a proven worker, and that's as far as Brock goes. And Brock brings back Paul Heyman. So
Rhonda's the proven box office draw. In the last 20 years, the three biggest box office draws are Mike Tyson, Conor McGregor, Mike Tyson.
Hello?
I think we lost him.
Oh, it could do worse.
Conor McGregor.
Now, he's gone. We've lost him to the internet.
I'm still here. I'm still here.
Bummer.
I thought me and Mo were going to get to talk a little bit.
This is what happens when you do a podcast and you're driving in the boonies.
What were you saying? Should four biggest box office draws, Tyson, Connor, Rhonda, and somebody else?
He's never going to get to finish this sentence.
I was saying, am I still on or are you cut off now? Okay, good.
We're still, anytime you're not saying something interesting, we can probably hear you, is what I'm finding.
Okay, good.
So, go ahead.
Go ahead, Mo.
Okay, well, all right. Where do I go with that? Rhonda is, she's a huge, it's a huge deal. The big story isn't Ronda Rousey's there. The big story is that Ronda Rousey's full-time. Mm-hmm. I mean, we knew she was there. She's been training in the performance center. She was going to be, you know, and it looked like it was going to be a WrestleMania match of some sort, and it's been, you know, coming for a long time since she showed up at WrestleMania with The Rock a few years ago, and a great moment. I can't believe I was there live for that was so incredible.
Were you?
I was was the Mania I was there live for, and wow. It was, let me tell you, it was in the building. I can't even explain to you the energy. It was unbelievable. I mean, she's definitely got incredible charisma, but she doesn't have to cut a huge promo because she's got great charisma. Like, yeah, that was obvious when she came out, the music, the shirt, the jacket.
That was Piper's jacket, by the way. That was the jacket that Piper's son gave her at Roddy's funeral.
I know. I just loved it. And she's got, she looked terrific. Like you say, she looked happy. She's going to be a big draw. The big thing is, you know, she told Hunter, apparently, I could make more money doing other things, but I won't be as happy. So this sounds like a person to me that's likely not going to have a Lesnar schedule. I mean, I think she's going to be out there doing it like the rest of the girls. At least that's the way it comes across to me. Even if she isn't, she's going to be doing multiple shots a year, even if it's not on the road all the time. But I think she might even be on the road a lot. Like, it's going to be... It's a huge addition. It's the biggest addition they've had in, I don't know how long. It's amazing.
Since Brock.
In some ways, I think it might be bigger because she, you know,
true.
Like, I really do. Like, it's a huge addition.
Well, like I said, she's that in that box office draw of Floyd and Connor. She's, when Rhonda had the fights, you listen, even, you know, there's some people saying like, oh, she couldn't take it in the UFC because she took all these L's. Listen, if Rhonda was announced today that she had another fight in the UFC, and one of those idiots has said, oh, ha, 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 they would be lining up at their local bar or their... pub or... trying to meet up
with a friend. You know, Joel, I don't think he's ever sounded more loquacious and interesting.
This is the best he's sat in a long time. This is how you should do everything.
Probably, this is probably the best points he's ever made.
Did I cut off again?
Yeah. And we were insulting you while you did. Joel, why don't you say something for a while?
I think I'll jump in there. This is a big deal, like you said. Her being here is...
What was I saying, though?
I'm talking.
We don't care.
But Go ahead, Josh. What were you saying?
Yeah, why don't you say this? I'm going to park in a second. Then I'll go. Then I'll...
Because parking is going to make a difference. Okay. Anyways, Rhonda, like you said, Rhonda is incredibly valuable asset to the WWE. I mean, there's a picture online of her being swarmed by media. I have not seen more random places retweeting about Ronda Rousey in WWE than I have in a long time. This is a huge story for them. This is continuing that train of positive press for the company. And I think barring any horrible mishaps or just Ronda not working out as a performer, I think this is a big deal for the company, and I think this is going to be a draw that you can really build around.
Well, the one thing that I think is key here, while we say all this, is how good a job do they do of making her continue to feel special.
Yes.
Because that's one thing that they've historically been pretty bad at. They've done a pretty good job with Brock with that. You know, they've continued to make Brock feel special as a general rule. Couple times, maybe there might have been a few issues, but as a general rule. But a lot of times they get somebody back and they don't feel special pretty quickly because of how they overexpose them or they mistreat them or whatever. And so that will be a big key here. You have her. How do you make her feel special continuously for a long time? If she's on Raw every single week, wrestling or cutting promos, even just cutting promos, she'll feel less special.
Yeah. I don't think she's going to be on every Monday Night Raw or every SmackDown. The one thing, like, she's already got a shirt on sale, and I would almost place money that shirt sells out.
Oh, yeah. No question.
We have officially lost Josh.
We've officially lost him. Now, in order to get him back, do you get him back? Does he call back in? Can we just ignore him from here on in? Or
I think no.
This is making for some entertaining radio, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, because I'm just going to leave this all in. So.
Well, you know, if you don't, then we'll lose all the chances that the things we're saying about him.
Yeah, exactly.
And those are just as important. Yeah.
Those are probably going to be what people talk about the most after this. That'll be the takeaway.
I would think so.
So, Josh, since you're back, are you back?
Sweet. He's, he's not there. Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, that's okay. That's probably the best point I've heard him make in a while.
Just the silence. So, while we wait for Josh to make his way back.
You and I watched New Japan. Do we want to talk about that while he's not around? And then we'll do TakeOver when he is? I don't know. Because as far as I'm concerned, things like AJ retained, the Usos retained, Bar won the belts again, and what else happened? Like none of this
beat
is
the
really...
Good Brothers.
Yeah. None of this to me really makes me like feel like it needs a lot of analysis is the point.
Yeah. We can acknowledge that this all happened and carry on in our lives, but New Japan, there are two very key points from the night. The first thing, I want to just quickly hit on them and then we'll go more into them. Suzuki, is this Suzuki's first I guess you'd call it big belt win, like ahead of like a never open weight title? Is this his first intercontinental heavyweight title type win for him in his career?
Yeah, I don't think, as I look back, he's been champion of Noah. But Noah was, that's fairly recently, a couple of years ago, when they're still not at the level they once were, or the level of New Japan. He's challenged for the belt. I don't think he ever held the IWGP title before, to my memory. So this might be his This might be his most significant title win, beating Tanahashi for the Intercontinental belt. Yeah.
The one thing, like, I admittedly, I was watching this match one eye on it, then one eye on other things. With this, the storyline I got from it is that this was the guy that thought that was the ace of Japan. Tanahashi was the ace. He carried them through that dark period, and his body is breaking down on him now. He's not quite that Tanahashi that he once was, and Suzuki capitalized on it and proved that he is not. I felt like Suzuki was trying to prove that you are no longer that ace. You are no longer that triumphant hero that will conquer again and again. That you will fall and I will break you. And I love that Tanahashi didn't tap out at all. I thought that was such a great nuance to Tanahashi, so that when he does come back, he does have a reason for his rematch. But it's been a long time coming for Tanahashi to take a break. We've heard the stories about him being with his torn bicep and just other damages he's taken as he's carried that Intercontinental title. And I tip my hat to him. He's been just go, and now he finally kind of gets a break. But the storyline with how Suzuki took the title, everything about it just worked for me.
Oh, yeah, I know. Suzuki is, like, he's always been great, but, I mean, how did we not vote this guy Gimmick of the Year all around all of us?
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's been great a long time, but since he came back last year, returned just over a year ago now to New Japan, like, he's just been better than ever. I mean, he's at late 40s, he might be 50 years old, but he doesn't look it, you know. He's legit, like Lesnar. You know, a legit tough guy, champion, you know. And he's got just the great persona, and his gimmick, he's just got it mastered. And the sadistic side of him, it feels real. You know, that match feels real when he's beating on Tanahashi and Tanahashi's leg. It feels like he really is. And it played off of the match he had with Okada in a lot of ways. And it was such a great match. I'm watching, because you don't know if you're watching it live, you don't know the result. Like, if you know the result, that'll lose something. But if you don't know the result and you're watching that, you're just like, is Tanahashi going to tap? Because he's Tanahashi. He doesn't tap. But he's being just tortured at a level that WWE wouldn't let happen, you know, in the ring. Just the viciousness of the attack is so brutal that Suzuki pulls out. And it's just... it was awesome. And storyline wise, because that's a you know, real when you say he's breaking down, and they turn, and it's obvious, and they turned it into a great storyline. And I just think, yeah, it was just such a great, like, just so well done. And we'll see how long Tanahashi's out now, if it's through the G1 or what, because he legitimately is out for a while finally. And that guy has worked through so much. And yes. I don't know that he'll ever be back to where he was, but he's so great as a storyteller. He'll always be, you know, hopefully he can heal up and he can come back and maybe be like Shawn Michaels, where he worked smarter, you know, and became more of a storyteller, and in some ways became even better.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And there are parallels between Shawn Michaels and Tanahashi. So that's actually a great little comparison. Josh is going to be back with us in a couple minutes. So we've got a few more minutes to enjoy our podcast before we've got...
Yeah, no, it'll be good. So it'll be good for a couple more minutes.
Yeah. The other thing...
Normally I insult you, and I still will.
Oh, I know you will.
But right now he's not around, so...
So this works good for me. I really like this moment, and I think a factor in this moment is being the Elite, but it is that turn. I was kind of surprised that Kenny dropped the title, but it also makes sense to elevate Jay White. But that turn, the way it played out, the way Kenny pushed Matt, it was Matt Jackson, correct?
Yeah, he pushed Matt. He'd be selling his back, so the fact that Matt got pushed you know, accidentally pushed by Omega, who just kind of lost his cool, didn't realize that this was who was behind him, pushed him. And then Matt wants to go to leave, and Nick is kind of sitting there and like, well, no, I got to go with my brother. He's my brother.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the being the elite, there's, you know, you're like, is this it for being the elite? And yeah, Kenny Omega, you can say he lost the Switchblade, Jay White, and then he's, you know, Adam Page is challenging Switchblade, and you know, I mean, Hangman Adam Page is like, you know, he's in Switchblade's face, and Omega,
I'm alive,
grabs the belt, and but we're okay without you. But and he grabs the belt. He grabs the belt out of Adam Page's hands and hands it back to Switchblade. Like, so this is his moment. He beat him, let him have his moment. And Cody's sitting there going, Cody comes to the ring and says, no, this is Hangman's moment. He's challenging him. Now you're taking away his moment. Everybody had a point. Like that was, it was such a great angle because everybody had a point. But,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. I don't have a sense that Omega's absolutely out of the Bullet Club yet. But the Bullet Club's already fracturing. You got the OGs, you know, and the Samoan faction there, you know, you got the being the elite was all kind of there, and now that's kind of messed up. And then you got the new kind of the new wave and the Cody and Marty Skrulls and Hangman Page and guys like that. So like there's so much they can do with it. And it was just great. And then of course the Golden Lovers.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't even get to that yet.
I will say before we get to the Golden Lovers, I loved Marty in this because you saw such a Marty's very lovable in being the elite, and then seeing him being so conflicted, he's never once setting Kenny up for anything. He's trying to stop it, so he's trying to be the peacemaker, which I love because it's not like, oh yeah, so we're all gonna side with Cody. You even saw Hangman kind of reluctantly grab up Kenny because he was still not sure what was going on with everything, and Cody was fantastic. Cody is the perfect cartoon comic book villain that you can have. The look on his face when he finally hit that devastating crossroads was just spot on. And I love the callback to New Year's Dash with them holding the chair, ready to deck Kenny, and then Ibushi comes out, clearing the ring. And something that has been a long time coming for New Japan is that the reconnection of the Golden Lovers, and not only that, but just the way it happened. You saw Kenny really in 10 minutes had lost everything. The Bucks had walked away from him. We don't know if that's going to be permanent. I don't think so, but Kenny lost the Bucks. The Bullet Club's more or less turned on him. Cody was ready to take his head off, and his one person that was always in that background that he'd always hinted at and talked about and thrown shots at and had been around, and Ibushi had helped him back after his G1 loss from Naito. He has all these things that finally culminates to just emotion from Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi and the streamers coming down, and just a moment. We always talk about wrestling being in these moments, and that's a moment that I think I'll always remember because it spilt for so long that we finally got to it now. What'd you think
I just gotta say, hold on, I'll just say, it's like the reunion of the Shield, right? The crowd was going crazy. It's the same type of thing, except for this is more emotional.
Yeah.
Because the timing was right. Whereas the timing on the Shield one, maybe they kind of should have done it a week earlier, or, you know, like it wasn't perfect. This was perfect.
Yeah.
And it's even more emotional in many ways because it felt more organic. And you also know it's going to lead somewhere down the road. Something's going to happen between these two. And it's going to lead to a match between them. It's going to be even more heated between Omega and Ibushi in some way. And that match, I mean, hey, he's the BBM, the best bout machine, Omega, for a reason. It's going to be 6, 7, 8, 25 stars. I don't know. It'll be great.
They're going to die doing that match. But just everything, and I had talked to Josh about this, and this is something I was going to mention to you. This now makes this next episode of Being the Elite must see. because this is going to build off of that. And to me, this also adds another little twist to All In, because being the Elite's building to All In and everything that happens in Ring of Honor and New Japan tie into being the Elite. So it's all leading somewhere. We're going to get payoff for this. And it makes a YouTube series produced by a couple wrestlers that edit on iMovie on a MacBook Pro that have no formal training in television production. It makes a YouTube show that they do must see, which to me, as someone in the broadcast, someone that went to school for television production, someone that likes cameras and likes coming up with story ideas and coming up with stuff like that, it really impresses me that they've been able to do this. And that you said it perfectly. This was the perfect time to pull the trigger. I had a feeling that's why I was really drawn into this, because I had a feeling this is when this was going to happen after the New Year's Dash. But now even more so, it just hit the nail right on the head.
All right, Josh, it's actually your turn.
Want to hear a joke?
Oh, God.
How does Zach Gowen never win a Royal Rumble? Because he can't have both feet on the ground.
I thought that the Naomi spot after the after the Kofi Kingston spot this year and the Kofi Kingston spots so many years back did not seem at all organic to me, and I was not a fan of it. But
so Joel and also, I said Joel and I have never felt the glow. Have you felt the glow, Mo?
I like her, yeah. But I just didn't think that this worked. I mean, it's like, no, have your own moments, create your own moments. Don't recreate somebody else's moments from the past and act like it's organic. And also, Stephanie, just shut up. Like, that didn't help.
Yeah, okay. So, the New Japan stuff, I think you guys said everything you need to say on this. These are the things I was trying to say about Ronda while I was going through the boonies. And then I hit a block of ice, and then it got totally disconnected. But I'm okay.
I wasn't going to ask if you're okay. I was going to ask if your phone is okay.
Yeah, my phone is fine. What I was going to say is the last time they had a big box office draw like this, it was Floyd, and that attracted so many non-wrestling fans. I remember going to my sister's basketball games, and people that knew that I liked wrestling came and was like, how do I watch it? What do I do? And this is before social media to get the feeling, but, you know, it was like, we're going to be in an age tomorrow where it's going to be on Pardon the Interruption. It's going to be on Undisputed. It's going to be on First Take. They're going to have all those venues to talk about WrestleMania now. So they're going to have all those eyes on WrestleMania. You know, SportsCenter.
I have to say this.
Broke that.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but don't you, just because this feel, well, I'm sure you'll play into this with what you're saying here.
Yeah.
Don't you feel like this is going to lead to a lot of pay-per-view buys, but not necessarily network subscriptions?
Yeah, which is funny, because there's still people that buy the network, which Joel and I always talk about and never understand. But at the very least, that's what's going to happen. The only trend right now beating Ronda and Nakamura are Royal Rumble is the number one trend. The only thing beating Ronda is Bruno Mars, who I just found out won a bunch of awards tonight. But Bruno Mars is the only thing beating Ronda Rousey. She's trending better on Twitter than Kendrick Lamar, DJ Khaled, and Despacito, which is a pretty good fade considering the success Despacito had as a global song last year. So Ronda is going to get by. She's going to draw in fans. I mean, I've talked to a few women that I know were diehard Ronda Rousey fans, and I had bugged them. She's going to WWE, and they're like, oh, I don't know. I hope not. And when the news happened today, they didn't watch the pay-per-view, but they heard the news, or I sent them a picture. Like, okay, well, how do I watch WrestleMania? What do I have to do to watch this Ronda fight? Because everyone's in to see what Ronda is. The important thing is for the Ronda thing is who is the opponent. And they tease both Charlotte, Asuka, which I don't think it'll be Asuka, and then they tease Steph. One of them is a very good idea. Like, Stephanie McMahon, as far as the draw, I get. I don't think it's the right choice. Ric Flair is a big enough name that having Charlotte will matter. It would have been so nice, too, by the way, if Roddy was still with us and we could have had Roddy bring out Ronda and then Rick could have brought up Charlotte and have those two legends duel against each other. But alas, we're not going to get that.
No, unfortunately we're not. And I love Roddy Piper.
Yeah. I was watching that Royal Rumble. Sorry to interrupt you there. I was watching the Royal Rumble doc back today and he had this emotional story about him winning the Intercontinental title and how much it meant to him, but it was only to give it to Brett. So he's like, you know, I never won a title in my entire life. And they said the only reason they wanted to give it to me was to give it to Brett. He's like, but, you know, Brett was a friend, and it was his time to move on, so I was fine with it and enjoyed it while I could.
The I do believe that the big money match is Asuka. I do not think you need to do it for WrestleMania when just her wrestling is a big money match.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think what you do, yeah, is I think you go Asuka versus Alexa and Charlotte versus Ronda. And then down the road, build to Ronda maybe next year at WrestleMania, or, you know, I mean, if Ronda's a champion for a full year and Asuka continues to be undefeated for a full year, you can imagine, even at a SummerSlam, but you can imagine at Mania next year, just how promotable that match is, how huge that match would be to wrestling fans and even to, you know, some people maybe who aren't wrestling fans. I think that's the direction you go in.
Dana had a comment, and I had it, but I want to get it exactly right. More or less, Dana kind of just said, like, he was pretty happy for her, and that he knew how big of a wrestling fan that she was. So
I got the comment right here.
Yeah, go ahead, Joel.
So it was a text from Dana White on Rousey's wrestling career. I'm very happy for her. She loves pro wrestling and has always been a big fan, so I know how much this means to her. She keeps accomplishing everything she ever wanted.
I don't think that's his actual text. It didn't have the word fuck in it.
That is true. So.
And it is Dana White.
He does swear a fair bit, so.
Is this the last we'll ever see in Ronda in the Octagon? Like, obviously, yeah. Brock, I think we think we're going to see Brock again. Joel and I joked about seeing John Jones and Brock in August. Whether that happens or not, we'll see.
You can't, because as soon as Brock comes back, he's got his year suspension.
We don't know that for sure. He may have already been suspended.
No. As soon as he retired, the suspension is suspended.
Because John Pollock has said different. Because that he's been currently suspended by USADA right now. It's a very complicated issue. I think you could be right, but Meltzer even said a little bit different too. I don't know. But we'll see what happens. I mean, that's an interesting situation now. They're going to have Brock and they're going to have Ronda coming up here. If they can get...
How long is John Jones... And John Jones is suspended for how long?
That's the one that I don't know. That's the bigger variable there. But I was going to say, too, if somehow they get Conor McGregor involved in WrestleMania, then they have WrestleMania bingo.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
And then I think Dana White really will go really insane, knowing that they have three of the biggest draws probably in the history of his company. Are those the three biggest draws in UFC? Ronda, Brock, and Conor? Maybe, and then GSP, I guess.
Yeah, probably them. Yeah, and you know, but it's okay. He's going to give CM Punk another shout, so it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sure WWE is really mad that he's CM
really
Punk, that they have Ronda.
He's really improved.
We'll see. yeah, as far as the Ronda thing, I think it's really exciting, and you know, but I guess the key to you guys then is, so what is the match for WrestleMania that you think that they're going to go with, and what's the match that you want them to go with, Joel?
I'll go first. So the match they're going to go with is Stephanie, but the match they should go with is Charlotte.
Okay. Mo?
They're going to go with Charlotte, and they should go with Charlotte.
Yeah. Will Ronda be on Raw tomorrow, you think?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else in the pay-per-view? I guess, you know, the Universal title match was plunder, but it did the job of what it needed to do.
So we definitely saw that. Don't knee Brock in the head, because he will punch you squarely in the head. Repeatedly.
Oh, that was... he got potatoed, and that was a receipt.
Yeah. Oh. I think Strowman got a couple receipts in that match.
Oh, yeah.
That table spot looked a little... Like, when he dumped the table, it looked like it was... It had a little bit more force and angled in such a way that it was a little bit more like, I'm going to drop this on your head.
I think you're right. I mean, that match was it. I can't say that they didn't work hard, but the crowd wasn't into it.
Yeah.
And it's just that coming off of watching Almos and Gargano and things like that, all of a sudden this match just felt very much like something for 25 years ago that Vince thinks is a big draw, but that isn't necessarily what the crowd wants.
Yeah, it was. I would say it's like it was a nice appetizer before the Women's Royal Rumble. Like it did what it needed to do in that match. Everyone came out to do what they did. Like Glenn didn't need to look good, so Kane, you know, pretty much took the pin, which he should have. Braun looked fine. He said there's still more with Brock and Braun if you want to go there. Braun had the 1-5 that nobody kicked. What, Braun and Brock?
Oh, I don't want to see it again.
I just don't think they have chemistry.
They don't have chemistry to me. And you know what? It did need to, but I think a big part of the match was everybody knew that Brock was going to pin Kane. There was no point that anything happened that made you think it differently. So there wasn't much drama to it.
Would have been interesting to see if they would have gone with the original idea and Finn would have been in that match. Just with how, I mean, I think it actually benefited Finn not having that Universal title match in the long term. I think he benefited more from what's been happening the last few weeks with the club coming back and his performance in the Rumble. I think Finn's been a real winner this past month. And Joel and I, when he got near Bray, we were screaming. He's like, no, stay away.
I know. I did the same thing.
You're doing so good. And I mean, the Bar won the titles. I don't think that's a shock. We're obviously going to get Jordan and Seth. We predicted that for a while. I was surprised the Usos kept the tag titles.
Especially two straight falls.
Yeah. And then
the Usos versus the Bludgeon Brothers is definitely the direction they're going. So.
God, that's a money match if I've ever seen one. Isn't it? Yeah. One side we're gonna probably get the Bar versus the Revival, and what's gonna be a pretty fun match. And then the other side we're gonna get the Bludgeon Brothers versus the Usos. And Jimmy and Jay, you think you had a DUI before? Get ready to face the Bludgeon Brothers.
Hey, they faced the Bludgeon Brothers 3 years ago and had a series of 4-star matches with
them. Oh, this is true. I forgot about that. They were actually pretty good.
Excellent.
And then. It looks like the Sammy KO stuff is it's either going to be a tag against Shane and Brian, or they're going to make Sammy heel and turn KO, I guess.
Maybe. That spot where he took the Rumble spot away from KO was interesting.
Yeah.
See if that leads to something.
So, I guess, you know, I thought the Royal Rumble did what it was supposed to do. It built to WrestleMania. We have one match for sure lined up for WrestleMania. We kind of see maybe where the tag division is going for WrestleMania. We have an idea. We have maybe 3 matches women-wise that we had set up, possibly Sasha Bailey, and then whoever Asuka's going to face, and then whoever Ronda's going to face, probably Charlotte. So we have 3. We have a nice wait, and then Seth and Jordan. So we have a nice road right now to the road to WrestleMania, which is what the Royal Rumble is supposed to do. It did its job.
And I'd like to transition here from one event that was good and enjoyable, I enjoyed myself, to an event that I think we finally saw a 5-star match in WWE in quite some time.
Oh, yeah.
But we're going to get to that. NXT TakeOver, we were a little bit like, there wasn't a lot of hype for this going into this show. Like, there wasn't.
There never is.
It's always like, oh, this will be the takeover that's a little bit slower. The tag team match, we'll start with that. Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. Kyle O'Reilly rocking out with the title was fantastic. That little moment there was great.
And got his Tanahashi down.
Yeah. He's replacing Tanahashi now. We've got the new ace. I thought it was a decent match, but it was nothing that blew me away, but I thought they did a good job.
I love this match.
You love that match? What'd you love about it?
I loved it. I you know what I loved about it was this whole event, I can say this about, but especially this match, this was like 1984 to 1988 tag team wrestling in the NWA, like Crockett area, you know, Crockett Promotions before it became WCW and all this stuff. Like, this whole event reminded me of, like, you know, a Fall Brawl or something. This would be like, the psychology behind it. It was a back and forth. It wasn't one long heat spot. And then a tag, you know, it was back and forth. You know, there was more than one heat spot. which is away from the WWE formula of just the super long heat spot. The really good selling from Akka, fantastic. The psychology of the quick tags from the smaller team and breaking down the bigger guys, like, it reminded me of like the Brainbusters, Andersons, or the Hart Foundation. I just think really great psychology and selling and a really terrific storyline. I love this match.
I was fine with it. I thought they did a good job with selling the leg, though, because there was a point there, it's one of those rare scenarios, like, I actually thought he was seriously hurt there for a second, so he did a very good job. AOP has really impressed me, and I think we're going to go face them with War Machine. I don't think it was any coincidence that War Machine was the first of the new superstars that were showing, and that should be a pretty good match between the big guys.
How could that be? War Machine's just one guy. How can they face the Authors of Pain? Like,
sorry, Rosenberg.
Did you hear about
that story, Mo?
No, what are you guys talking about? So Pete Rosenberg's clearly a tool.
Peter Rosenberg was on Twitter and said that War Machine would have to change his name. And everyone's like, dude, it's a tag team. He's like, oh, I'm sorry that I don't watch every single source of wrestling. I have a life. And then he started a hashtag with a life. And then everyone just kind of buried him. Was like, dude, you're a journalist that covers wrestling. Like, you should know these things. And he just went on a rant saying, it's like, it's not his responsibility to know everything about wrestling. He just needs to know WWE.
And he was taking shots at Ring of Honor fans, booing him. And he was also, he goes on his podcast now and he whines about the IWC not being nice to him. And they're jealous of his spot.
Yeah.
What a tool. Like, you moron. This is the exact reason why you do need to know more than WWE. Because these guys eventually show up in the WWE and you're going to put your foot in your mouth. Moron.
And sure is. One of his arguments was how many jobs he has. Like, he has a bunch of different radio stations that he's involved with. And he's even gone on the air and admitted because he'll talk in New York, he'll admit that he doesn't know a lot about the Yankees, but he'll still talk about baseball.
Yeah.
So it's like someone coming on any sort of podcast and going, I'm an expert. And that's what Rosenberg has portrayed himself as, an expert.
I believe he said he didn't know who Greg Bird was. And if you, I don't know how closely you follow baseball, Mo.
Enough to know that.
Yeah, but you need to know who he is. You need to know who Greg Bird is. He's not the number one Yankee. Obviously, you know, there's Sanchez and Judge and now Juan Carlos Stanton. But you should know who Greg Bird is.
Can I use an example? I don't know who Greg Bird is, but I will be on a baseball podcast to talk about baseball because I don't have the knowledge. And if I'm ever involved in a situation where I have to talk about baseball, I'm going to do my research. The issue that I had, one of Rosenberg's excuse was that, when he Googled War Machine, it popped up as the fighter. But if you go type in pro wrestling War Machine, and both me and Josh did this, the WWE stories pop up and a couple other stories from different dirt sheet sites talk about War Machine signing with WWE. And if you click on any of them, they're going to say the guy's names and you're going to be like, oh, you know what?
They say Raymond Rowe, whatever the other guy's name is, tag team from New Japan and Reign of Honor, signed to WWE Performance Center.
And all you have to say is, hey, he got really upset that fans were going after him for not knowing that. But if you're expected to be any sort of expert or expected as to be someone that has knowledge, you should either say, hey, my bad, I made a mistake, let's move on, I will do better to do research, or do the research, know who's coming into your company, because you will be on the pre-show panel and you will have to talk about these different guys as they start coming up the system.
How about Samoa Joe on that panel yesterday?
Yes.
Oh my God, was he awesome.
Wasn't he great?
He has a job after it's all done.
He was amazing, man. That's what Like, that's what you're supposed to be. That was a professional. Like, that guy, he was fantastic.
He could have came in, he could have pouted that, oh, man, I'm so mad that I'm not part of the Royal Rumble, and I'm not even on the main panel, I'm on the NXT panel. But no, he came in like a professional, knew his stuff, and just killed it.
He was so good.
And
so damn
like,
good.
One of my favorite parts of that was him and Vega. Almost.
Yeah, so good.
I
want to watch them wrestle now. So I want to watch him and Almost wrestle now after that so bad.
Because it just, and that's exactly what I was thinking. Is like, oh man, the promos between these two would be fantastic, and then the match between Almost and Joe would be fantastic. Like this just shows Joe's ability on the mic, but it also shows Vega's ability on the mic, which is you
She's
took
really
a pre-show and you elevated someone, and that's all you can ask for sometimes from a pre-show is hopefully this elevates someone and helps shine an even brighter light on them. But
I wanted to see their Gargano match also more after that.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. It was really good.
Okay, let's say in order. So we got War Machine, and then Peter Rosenberg did his tool thing. And then we had Velveteen and Cassius Ohno. I think this part about this match, obviously, everything Velveteen did coming down with his entrance, but the crowd counting to 30 from what was a throwaway line on the pre-show.
Oh, I wouldn't call it a throwaway line. It was the key point of the
promo. I'm just saying for them in the arena, like, good for them to, in the arena to hear that and then stay with it.
Yeah.
I liked when he knocked him down the first time and he's like, count, ref, count. And just his entrance and everything about it just worked. And Mo, did you happen to see the 8-minute like mini doc on Chris Hero, Cassius Ohno?
No, I didn't. No.
You gotta watch it.
It's really good.
It gets a guy over, and you know who Cassius Ohno is in 8 minutes.
Is it where was it?
YouTube.
It's on the just on the YouTube.
Okay, YouTube. Okay.
It's definitely highly recommended, but you have that going into this match. Velveteen's obviously over, and Chris Hero's well-known to the hardcore wrestling community, Cassius Ohno. Match was a little sloppy, but I think the right guy won. It's a shame that Hero's not going to ever be elevated more than what he is. I don't know, maybe he will, but it just was a nice win for Velveteen, and I think it keeps that ball rolling for him to continue to build him up as a future star of NXT and potentially a future star for WWE.
I love what I love about Velveteen Dream is that he comes out and he's like, I'm a star. You know, he says like he acts like and says I'm a star, and therefore he's a star.
Yeah.
You know, unlike a guy like Hideo Itami or even a Cassius Ohno who just come to the ring, you know, and that's something that he comes to the ring like, hey, I'm special, and you should know I'm special. And the fact is that that's kind of a character that that could have been, you know, like a comedy character and a throwaway character. And I was really skeptical about when I first heard about it, you know, and that he was going to be doing this prince-like character. And I think the best of his wife sold over the crowd is it could be somebody that they bury. It could be somebody that it could have failed, and yet he's making it work, and that makes him a real-life underdog, even if the character isn't an underdog, the real person behind it is. And I think that's why the crowd really, really digs him.
Yeah, I agree.
And I go ahead, Josh.
No, you go, dude.
I was going to say, I look at Velveteen, and he's got a charisma to him that I think builds on, like you said, with that, I'm a star, so therefore I am. I think that's another thing that draws people in, and how committed he is to his gimmick. Like, his tights for his match with Aleister Black were great, and then the tights that he had for Cassius Ohno were great. They were boxing. They were boxing shorts. It was fantastic. It was exactly what you wanted from a guy, and he's all in.
For sure.
He's got a mix of everything in him. He's got some of the high flying that, you know, you can put whatever, but even just, I've never seen a guy get their persona so fast in their career, and like some of the mixture of Rick Rude that he has with his guy either. The guy, and I think a lot of us saw this when we saw Tough Enough right off the bat, like, I think that's why a lot of us are rooting for Patrick Clark, is like the guy just gets it. And it's not just because he's a fan that helps, but he's a fan that just gets it and knows how to do it. I mean, there's a clip right going around on YouTube of when all the Tough Enough contestants did entrances, and they all were kind of goofy and whatever, and he came out with his entrance and just sold it. And that's just kind of what this guy has been. Like, he just gets his persona. Yeah.
All right, what's next? Joel,
everyone still there?
Yeah.
Still here? Okay. Yeah.
The only person that leaves this podcast is you, Josh.
I don't know how I left that one, because I'm on Wi-Fi.
The next
Did I completely cut off at all of that?
No, we heard you. We heard you.
Okay.
You like, don't, please, again. Please don't repeat it, please.
Let's talk about Adam Cole ending his career before he turns 30.
Holy shit.
Nope, we're not getting there just yet. You skipped something.
Hey,
this will probably
Ember
be
Moon
short.
And Shayna Baszler.
Would you think, like, I thought it was an okay, I thought it was all right. It was nothing that I was blown away by. The biggest thing I take away is Baszler is definitely a heel. And she's a good heel. Like, she definitely has that, I feel, down pat. But in ring, it just didn't quite click for me. It's not there quite yet. And that's why this is developmental, because then these guys can grow and hopefully get better.
Are you asking me or are you asking Josh?
Either
He's or. Asking you.
Okay. Okay, Shayna Baszler, to me, reminds me very much of Samoa Joe and as far as persona and presence. And just mannerisms and all this stuff. Like, it's very much like that caged lion persona that Samoa Joe has. And, you know, that you're, you know, with the strikes and the just the overall sense of skills, strikes and submissions and all that stuff. So that's what I think is really good about her. And obviously she's green and she has, needs some work and it was put in a pretty heavy spot. I mean, the match itself was, it worked for what it wanted to be because they sold the arm for long enough that at the end, when Ember Moon kind of overcame it and managed to pin her, the crowd popped huge. They weren't with it for most of the match, but it worked for what it needed to be because clearly the crowd was invested enough that they popped huge when that happened. Like most people of us were kind of expecting a title change. I kind of was. It's like the Minoru Suzuki Tanahashi match. I mean, it's the same type of match, but it's not as good.
Yeah. No, I would agree.
But again, it's also much like that, and like I say, like this feeling like an NWA show from the 80s. That type of match would be in there at some point, you know.
Yeah. Josh, how'd you feel about it?
I love Mo's comparison to Joe because I felt a lot like that with Joe, and we need to put over someone that's just and she's a little Ken Shamrock too, just like she's just this dangerous woman that's gonna mess you up. Ember is so good at selling things and just kind of being helpless. It's the one thing that Ember does really good. That and the Eclipse. Those are the two things that Ember Moon is really good at. Is those two things.
Well, another thing about Shayna Baszler is, compared to still like someone like, a Peyton Royce or Alexa Bliss or whatever, she actually looks like a female athlete.
Yes.
Instead of somebody who's athletic, who's a model instead.
A character even, yeah.
Yeah, or a character even. Like, she actually looks like a true female athlete, like, when you think of, what an athlete who would be at the Olympics would look like physically, an actual true world-class athlete, that's what they look like. And I think that going for her really helps her as well.
Yeah, I would agree.
Now we get to Adam Cole taking dumb bumps.
Jesus Christ, that guy, man. The chair spot and the ladder spatch, which one is dumber? Or are they just equally dumb?
The chair spot's the dumbest thing I ever seen in my life. That is
insane. What are you doing?
When he showed up at the Rumble tonight, I thought he did look slow, and he had the ribs wrapped, and I was like, that's not a work.
No.
Not after what you did.
No.
But that was insane.
You got to think that Vince and a lot of guys in the back like that toughness, that he took that chair spot and that ladder spot and then came out and competed for what, about 10 minutes in the Rumble tonight?
You're forgetting that ladder spot, the chair spot, and then the announcer table spot with the knees.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is probably the easiest spot for him to take out of the three.
That's
probably the safest spot.
That ladder bump just, holy crap. The match itself, I really enjoyed the match. I was hooked. I was invested. I like Black and I like Cole, and they did a really good job. I don't know if I'm a big fan of how far Cole went, but you're definitely not going to forget who Adam Cole is.
No.
Well, I mean, I've seen Adam Cole do this stuff before, though. Yeah, I've seen him do stuff like this in ROH where it's like, holy shit, you know?
It reminded me of the O'Reilly and, sorry to interrupt there, Mo, but it reminded me of the O'Reilly street fight he had. That was brutal between the two of those guys.
Vicious match. He does this. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, we say this about the guy. He doesn't do, like, but that would be so great. Like, I think he's such an incredible talent. And he doesn't do the things that a Ricochet does. Like, he doesn't do these things, the incredible high-flying athletic moves or the, you know, he takes these bumps, but he doesn't take them every time. He takes them when it will get him over. That's the key. Like, he doesn't do it. He's not like some of these guys who you're like, oh, you're going to kill yourself because you're doing this every night. He doesn't do that every night. He does that at the right time in the right match. Even then, I wish he wouldn't do that tear spot ever again.
Yeah, it was just, it was a dumb spot. It was when he did that, I was like, oh, that's one of the things they tease, but they never do. You know, sometimes how like they'll bring the chairs out and like, oh, he's gonna get that they'll bring the stairs and they'll be like, oh, he's going to get powerbombed on the stairs, but he's not going to actually get powerbombed on the stairs. And then when he actually did it, I'm like, oh my God, he actually did it. Holy shit. Yeah.
My exact same reaction. No way this will actually happen. This is just a tease. And then he did it. Wow.
And we got to talk to Aleister Black as an absolute star. I question now where they're going with the world title. It could be maybe a triple threat, maybe a four-way. I thought it was a no-brainer almost in Black, but maybe close part Black, of it now.
No, almost in Black for sure. That's why Black won. I was like, as soon as Black won, I was like, that's too bad for Adam Cole to lose again. To Black. I'm like, but it's Black's turn. Like, it's Black versus almost at WrestleMania, you know, takeover, and that's the perfect match for them, both of them. And it's going to be awesome.
You could almost see Cole, Riley, and Fish tonight after WrestleMania just because they're so ready to go. You know, they're just ready to go. I know they've got to keep some stars in NXT, but, you know, with Ricochet, War Machine, EC3, and Candice LeRae, they have four stars now that they're ready to go, especially, and on the male side, with Ricochet and EC3, two other guys that are main event world title worthy. And Pete Dunne, who seems to be going to be translating over as well.
Yeah, I don't know who they're going to bring up. Like, it's... You know, I mean, I have suspicions that, like, Authors of Pain will come up, but it's like, you know, Authors of Pain come up, and if they lose Paul Ellering, they'd lose a portion of their act, and I don't see Paul Ellering coming up, so it's kind of a weird thing. Like, I don't know who's coming up, but I don't know if
Rhonda did an interview with ESPN, by the way, and she just one of the main quotes said, This is my life now. First priority of my timeline for the next several years will be WWE.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's an exclusive interview right now on SportsCenter you can find anyway. Sorry, Mo.
No, that's okay. I love the match with Black and Cole, and, I don't know if you're right. Undisputed Era could come up right away. I don't know that they will, and I don't know that Vince will 100% get them. So that kind of worries me because they are smaller guys.
Mm-hmm. Send him to 205. 205 Live, goddammit.
I do wonder about Ray if he's back permanently.
He's not. So I just read on Ray, this is the deal. It was thought to be a one-time thing, but nobody had really seen him on the indies, and officials were shocked of how good he looked. And yeah. Now want to offer a long-time deal. So they do offer it. Like I was saying, Joel and I talked about this, and you had mentioned about how bloated the NXT roster is, but how bloated the main roster is. So you're going to add a guy like Rey Mysterio, and we already know Bobby Lashley is apparently signed or is close to signing. So there's two more guys you're adding to this bloated roster.
Well, my
Lashley, obviously, I think that's a strong chance to be the SummerSlam opponent for Brock. But
yeah,
but I was just thinking, you know, with what happened with Enzo and him being gone, and then needing some star power for 205.
Yeah,
I don't see Ray ever working the regular schedule he did before. But him being added to that 205 roster, they really, or maybe even as soon as they announced that they would have a general manager, that was the guy I went to in my head.
Yeah, I mean, even if they
that could keep him on TV. That could keep him on TV every week. He's the 205 manager. He only does occasional matches, and he doesn't have to work that schedule then. I could see that.
Yeah. I could see a Hall of Fame for Ray as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's going to go for sure.
What they can do in 205, I mean, Kenta versus Rey Mysterio is a dream match that they have the possibility to line up for that title. I think it's Cedric Alexander's turn to get that title, but if you give it to Hideo right now and you can build to an Hideo Rey match, I think that's a money match you can have at WrestleMania. That's a dream match that can deliver.
And I do think if you have Rey, I think if you're going to, when you debut Ricochet or whatever you're going to call him, I think Rey might be a good opponent to have. If he's going to be kind of in a lesser role, then I think doing a takeover special is not going to kill him. And I think that would be a nice spot for him to be at. I think that'd be a great way to introduce Ricochet.
Do they do Ricochet and or Prince Puma and Rey on?
True.
Yeah.
I think it's gonna be Ricochet and Velveteen NXT New Orleans.
That'd be awesome.
That's where I think the match is gonna go. And unfortunately, one of those guys has to lose, and I think it has to be Velveteen. I don't think Ricochet can lose his first match.
We'll see. I don't know if that'll be his first match. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, there's a lot of options.
Trevor Ricochet, man.
Let's talk about this main event and one of the best matches, maybe in NXT history. There's just so much in this match. Joel, take it away.
I was hooked. Like they had everything you'd want in this match. Almost felt like a big deal. Johnny felt like Daniel Bryan underdog. Johnny and Almost just click. Like they are just. They just work so well together that just through 32 minutes, I was enthralled. And at different points, I thought, maybe they'll pull the trigger on Johnny. Maybe Johnny's going to win. Oh, maybe this is the moment that Ciampa's going to come out and screw things up. Or maybe this is the point where Almost retains. There were so many different peaks and valleys to this. When Candice came out and finally stopped Vega and drove her away, I loved it. It was great from start to finish. I really, really, really enjoyed this match. And I dare I say right now, as of right now, I enjoyed this more than I did Jericho and Omega. And I really like Omega and Jericho. So this to me stands out. Just the story that they told, everything that this match had, everything you wanted in a build, it just worked. This Johnny losing doesn't impact Johnny Gargano down the line. If anything, this match elevated Johnny and shined an even brighter light on his amazing talent. And it elevated Almost to the level that I knew. Like, I heard so many things about La Sombra. And now to see where he is, it's so awesome to see. And, I mean, you've got storyline now furthered with Johnny because of the copyright logo popping up. And then that mean evil, bald-headed, bearded man swings his crutch. And you saw a limp, so they're not going to get to the match just yet. But it's going to be a slow build to eventually Johnny versus Ciampa. And I've told Josh this. I haven't thought it all the way through, booking-wise, but I would almost have Ciampa win the title, and that's eventually who Johnny takes the NXT title off of, is Ciampa. Because I think that is a perfect bow tie on this storyline between Ciampa and Gargano. Oh, and this is 5 stars for me.
Yeah, it's 5 stars for me as well. I think you hit everything. Just his, I haven't seen anyone like the facials and the selling. Shawn Michaels, like, he's close to that. It's just the storytelling, everything you want from a match, everything was there. Both performers just absolutely knocked it out. I thought, you know, we already knew Johnny was good, but like you said, I thought almost took his career to another level in this match and showed that he could be a top guy, showed that the McIntyre match wasn't just a fluke, that he is a top guy, and what a transformation for him in a year.
I give this 4 95/100.
Oh. Not in the Tokyo Dome, right? That's why?
Kenny Omega.
Well, you know what? You know why I do? You know what keeps it for me? 5 for me? It's as close as you can get to a 5-star without being 5-star. But what keeps it for me is that the actual pinfall spot was a little anticlimactic, and the crowd didn't pop huge for it because I don't think they expected it there. So a failure to build to that actual moment of the pin, I think that it kind of felt like it came out of nowhere after everything that had happened. And I think that that keeps it from being the perfect match, which is what you have to be 5 stars for me.
Fair.
But other than that, it was utterly brilliant. It's the best match of the year, better than Suzuki and Tanahashi, and better than Jericho and Omega so far. Like, it's just awesome, awesome match. Gargano is a guy who I look at and I'm like, I don't want 205 Live. I don't even want 205 Live, to be honest with you. I just want the best guys from that to be put into different places in the roster. And I don't care about weight limits. I never have, and whatever. But unless you're going to do it right, and they don't do it right. But, and who knows, maybe they will now. Maybe they'll reset things and figure out everything they've done wrong. But I don't know, they've hurt the division so much already. But, yeah, Gargano, I mean, when it was actually more Rinaldo when he compared him to Daniel Bryan. I'm like, that's perfect. Like, that's the perfect guy who to compare him to is the underdog who the crowd just gets behind. He's just... as good as Almas was, and he did look good, and he looked great against McIntyre, it was the Gargano show. He was the star. Like, he just, it was all about him and his story and his performance, really. I thought, just so damn good. And yes, too bad that they failed to somehow, I think, just tell the story that this was the moment where Almas is about to pin him unless Gargano fights it off. And he fails to fight off the DDT and then gets pinned. I think that could have brought the crowd back up for that moment, and that was the one thing they lacked.
I think the crowd was knocked once he did that spot on the ring post. I think at that point you feel a lot more concerned for Johnny. And I think that's the way I took it from. But you bring up a good point as well.
You could be right. You could be right. Yeah. That's a really safe spot though.
Because Johnny had his eyes glazed, and the last time I remember seeing that was Sean at that Survivor Series.
Well, he does such a good job of doing that eyes glazed thing, you know?
Yeah.
But that, I mean, yeah, that knees thing is a super safe spot that looks like it's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's the thing about it. So,
Adam Cole could take lessons.
What is it? Blackheart? The Ciampa hat on? Yeah. I hope that's his new nickname, but...
Yeah.
I can't wait for that match. I mean, I don't know when it's coming. I'm hoping it's for Mania. I don't know if he'll be ready by then, but it wasn't an awesome. I was waiting for LeRae to attack Vega. That part I was waiting for. But when the match was over and Ciampa didn't cost him the match, I thought we weren't going to see it. So that was a real surprise. Really well done.
Anything else? Because I know we got to get to the one more subject, and I know we're going long on time. So
no.
Okay, move on then.
NXT did well.
Yeah, it's great NXT show, great Royal Rumble, everything good in Japan this week. Fortunately, there's some negative, and we got to talk about Enzo Amore really quick. Obviously, like I said, we're going over time, and I don't want to talk too much about this stupid thing anyways, but...
Can I start it off?
Yeah, your most improved wrestler of the year. Go ahead.
Okay. So...
Yeah, I told you at the time I hated that choice, right?
Oh, remember? Yeah.
That was the first thing I said.
This is the part of the reason why I'm starting this off. That my pick. It's really irrelevant to this whole story, but I figured throw that out there at the start. This whole thing is, regardless of whether Enzo Amore's innocent or guilty, he didn't tell WWE what was going on, which is his fatal mistake and why he's gone. And I don't think, really and truly, this is a drop in a bucket to WWE, because I think they've got so many positive things going right now. Letting him go is the smartest thing that they could have done as a company. He burnt so many bridges within that company. He continuously showed a lack of respect, and there was a reason why he wasn't changing with the rest of the guys. And for him, I don't know if he's guilty or innocent. I'm gonna let the professionals deal with that. But regardless of where that comes, he's. I have no use for Enzo Amore. He's gone, and he's going to probably fade away into obscurity. He's going to try to have a rap career, but I don't really care. This whole thing with Enzo Amore is an unfortunate situation, but hopefully that if he is found guilty, then I hope he gets a few books thrown at him, and he ends up behind bars for what he's done. If he is innocent, then fine, let him go live his life, but I have no use for the guy, so that's...
You know what? You took everything I wanted to say.
It's really not hard. To me, it's so cut and dry, the situation, as he is, what Enzo Amore is, what the situation is. We can't speculate on what it is, and I don't think it's our place to speculate whether he did it or not. Because we don't have DNA evidence in front of us. We don't have...
No, but actions tell us about what the human, what kind of human being he is, for how he's treated Cass, and all that's coming out the last little bit, how he treated his best friend.
Yeah.
When Enzo went to the hospital, Cass was by his side, looking care of him. And when Cass went to the hospital, Enzo, let's just say, was a dick about a lot of the stuff that's happened with Cass that's came out the last few weeks. And
see, you can question his character, and by no means is, I don't think he has much of a character to begin with. But ultimately, I don't think you can, I don't think any of us are within the right to decide if he's guilty or innocent. You need hard evidence.
I'm just going by his character. The judicial project will let it go, and he seems to think that he's innocent, and, you know, we're living in this time. You and I have had plenty of talks about this, Joel, with, you know, all the people being accused. And Lita today was stepping up with the time's up on her shirt. So she and the WWE are being proactive in this, and they need to be in this time. It's getting a little ridiculous from all these men thinking that they can take over on these women. It's kind of bullshit, and I'm glad the WWE stepped up with the, you know, it shifted to them with accusations coming up, and they took control. And if he's innocent, then he's innocent, and they'll go from there. But he still knew information that was against him that made him look bad, and he decided to hold it from the company. And for that, he deserved to be fired for that, just that alone.
Mo, how do you feel about everything? I mean, we know how you felt about Enzo Amore, so...
Yeah, obviously I wasn't a big fan of the guy anyway. But that's crazy personality. I mean, you can't deny that, right? Like, you saw his... Did you see that with... him and Corey Graves, obviously, on the network, the sit-down interview?
Yeah.
Like, I'm watching this, I'm thinking, this is a money heel. This is the best heel they had. That there's nobody writing it for them. There's nobody screwing it up. This guy's just such a dick. He's so hateable. And there's money there. And that's why I think, unfortunately, he's probably not going to fade away. He probably will go to rap and succeed because he's so incredibly charismatic. He's also clearly a scumbag. And it's been obvious to me that I'm like, this is going to end badly for a while. Like, you hear about the party and the different things that he was doing even before this. And you're like, you can't keep that head up. Like, some people can't handle success and can't handle, and they live the fast lifestyle and it just crashes on them. And it was just a matter of time for it to happen in some way or another. And I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously drugs are part of his lifestyle and he's misogynistic, whether or not he's innocent or guilty. He's a scumbag. And so this is not a surprise to me. And like I said, I don't think he'll fade away, but I do think no matter what, all of it is going to end badly. This is not even close to the final step for this guy.
I'm going to ask, you think, because just the way you're kind of going, did you think there was something along the lines of a potential overdose in his future?
Oh, that's the type of thing that I thought before, and I think now is still, I don't think that this is a guy who will learn any lessons from things, and I see a lot of people who live this lifestyle and you think it's going to end badly. You get the patient person, they don't. You get, you know, the Jake Roberts or the Dennis Rodman, who somehow you look at them and you think, wow, they survived it all, and they still are. And they can still be dumbasses. I mean, Rodman was just caught for a DUI just recently here. But you think yourself, a lot of these people, though, they do. I mean, the crash is coming. I still think it's coming. I don't know if it'll be an overdose or what it'll be. But I feel like this is a guy who, yeah, he's going to live. He's going to live hard. He's going to live fast. And he's going to crash the same way. And I've just felt like that for a while, things I've heard about him. And he's just so cocky and about himself that nobody's going to protect him from himself.
No, and I think I think in a lot of ways, Enzo Amore is that classic case of a celebrity that feels like he's bulletproof. And when he finds out he's not bulletproof, that bullet's going to rip him apart. It's a metaphorical bullet, but he's going to get hit by it, and he's not going to know what to do.
I totally agree. That's a perfect way to put it.
Okay. Anything else, boys?
XFL?
Go ahead. I've talked about it to death. Anything you guys want to discuss, go ahead. And if I want to chip in, anything else, I'll go. But Mo, you seem like you've got a load of guts.
No, Joel. I'm just wondering, Joel, then, do you have any thoughts on it, then?
I'm intrigued by it. Does this confirm that Vince is a crazy old man? Yes. Does it work? I don't know. Do I have my doubts? Yes. The two things I'm very intrigued by are the two words that Vince had said in it: safer and no DUIs. I'm wondering.
Hi, Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, he can go play in the CFL.
He's got 3 more days to hit the deadline.
He's not playing in the CFL. He scared them off.
Which is okay. I don't mind not having him around.
He's Enzo. He's Enzo.
Good.
He and Enzo are the same basic guy.
I'm perfectly okay with that because I think you're absolutely right. He's another guy that I think is heading towards a crash that I don't think he's ready to hit. And when he when it does happen, then I think this is a change that he's not. He's Johnny Manziel. I think that's one shoe that I think people sadly are waiting to drop.
I'm going to just put it out to you here. This is going to fail.
You're coming up a little staticky.
It's going to fail. It's going to be terrible.
There you go.
You know it's going to fail. Yeah. I mean, you're looking at it. I mean, just look at the things. It's going to be safer. But we're not going to have halftime, so the players aren't going to have a chance to rest.
I don't understand that shit. That was dumb.
Yeah, we're going to have a 30-man roster, but it's going to be safer. And yet you're going to have, like, nobody, you know, on the sidelines. It's basically a 30-man roster. You have 11 men on the field, and that's only... And then you have a kicker, and you have a punter, so you have 6 people in reserve to fill positions, but you're going to be safer? I mean, it makes
sense.
Where
did they say 30-man rosters?
That's what was out there. 30-man, actually 40-man, but 40-man, but 30-man on game day.
That's weird. There's a lot. Like, I will give them credit because I think Vince is ahead of the curve on streaming and stuff.
So I think they'll be able to find a platform for it. I don't think that'll be a problem. But
but how much income is that going to
make? You know, the one thing that every person that barely remembered the XFL to me, the one thing they brought up to me, Mo, what they liked about the XFL was the ball chase. And there's no chance, if they want to be safer, they can do that spot again.
Well, they can't do that spot. And they're going to be, like I say, you're going to be faster, but that's okay. The CFL is faster, you know, as far, and it doesn't have as many men, but it has a 37-man roster on game day, which is better. You know, and the 45-man roster in the NFL. So, but if you're going to be faster, you're going to eliminate all the commercial breaks, you're going to eliminate all this stuff, and you're going to, injuries occur when people get tired in football. You're going to make it safer for tackling. It doesn't, all this stuff doesn't add up. You can't say we're going to do this and we're going to do this, and then if you can't actually do it, and we're going to be the league that listens to the fans. Really? You're the league that's going to listen to the fans? How well do you listen to your wrestling fans?
Today was the first time in 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm supposed to believe that you're going to listen to the fans as a football company when I watch you push people down our throats and refuse to give pushes to the guys, the fans watching, refuse to listen to them for year after year after year in wrestling? I'm supposed to believe you're
going to listen. Mo, it's okay, Mo, because you know what? Who wants to watch something for 3.5 hours? Oh, I can't believe he said that line. I can't believe he said that line.
Do you think that was a shot at USA?
I don't know what that was, because they gave us over 6 hours on their own network today.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Eight and a half in 48 hours.
And you got eight teams. You got a total of, 43 games in total. You got eight teams you need to make, and it's going to be $10 million to run a team regardless, with salaries and all the different stuff. I mean, so that's $80 million you need to bring in revenue. You're not going to bring that in for ticket sales, even close to that. So, I mean, your revenue streams that you need to come up with elsewhere have to be so strong, and I don't think you're going to get much coming. Like, some of these cities will draw 600 people, I swear to God. You know, 6,000 might be good. Like you got to come up with a huge, you're going to need to draw $80 million just to break even for this company. As far as I'm concerned, annually, just to run a 10-team or 8-team league for 10 games. And if I look at that, I think you're not going to get that from the streaming service. I don't see any way this thing makes any sense. And you're not going to average 50,000 people, and you're definitely not going to do it if you're launching in February, right after the Super Bowl, thinking, well, his logic before, and it was when this is when the most people watch football, so this is when it's at its most highest popularity, and then it's gone. And it's like, no, you moron, this is when it builds to, and after that, we need a break. And then in a few months, you start to hear about the training camps, you start getting back into it. But to just give it to us thinking that, oh, well, this is when we want it the most, it's like, no, the reason we want it the most is because it built. It built to something, and once that's over, you need a break, and then it's time for some other sport for a while. And it's a mess. It's the whole thing is a mess. It doesn't make any sense. And you can have 2 years to put it together. Hopefully it never happens, because this is a guy who one failure on the XFL already looks pretty bad, but people will forget it. He's Vince McMahon. Ha ha ha. He's the wrestling. He's still the wrestling god, right? He's still the, a second one, and this becomes his legacy more than wrestling, and he becomes a joke, and that's how he's going to be viewed by a lot of people.
Yeah, it's weird. The people that are outside that I've talked to that aren't as familiar with the WWE dealings all feel that this is going to be somewhat successful, and I thought Vince did. I thought at the press conference, Vince did a really good job. By the way, the way he handled things, I thought he was on his best behavior. It's like some of the best behavior I've ever seen him from. But
yeah, he didn't drop like spot like he did on the original no. XFL press conference where he went out of his way to drop an F bomb, even though it was being screamed loud across different things, just to prove that he was a rebel. Yeah,
you have to be
friendly.
You have to compete with players that, okay, so you had the players that are going to go to the NFL. There's, I've heard some people like, well, maybe some of these players don't want to go to the XFL and the NFL. No, they're not. They're going to want to go to the NFL still. I know the NFL's had a rough season, and you have to deal with the Arena League and the CFL. Why? Because those leagues are there. They have solid fan bases in those areas. I lived in Spokane. You know, Spokane does okay for arena football, but it's there and it's something fun to go with. The XFL is going to be for those players that want the flashy recognition for when they come into the league. And that's about it. So, yeah, maybe they'll get a Tim Tebow. Great. That's because that's what Tim Tebow does. He goes to the flashy thing. That's why he's not going to go to the CFL. Maybe they'll bend and let Johnny Manziel in. But you're not going to get the top-ranked talent, because the talent that is second level, like a Bo Levi Mitchell, that aren't good enough for the NFL just yet, are still going to go to the CFL or maybe go to the Arena League instead of going to the XFL. Oh. The only reason some of these players are going to the XFL is if their NFL dream is completely done and they had to move on and become a garbage man or something like that. So we're going to get a bunch of those type of stories.
It's going to be about the quality of football this time. Remember I said that? It's like...
You're not getting those players.
No, you're not. And Bo Levi Mitchell, by the way, could easily make the NFL, but...
I know he could.
We'll find out
at the end of the season. It's...
I don't know about that. That's a different part.
And how can you compete with the salaries, too? You know, like the CFL has a solid bankroll of salary, whereas we know there's $100,000 of this bankroll by Vince. Where's the rest of this money coming from? Who is Vince saying like, this is the last time you're going to see me? That's bullshit. We know that we're going to see Vince a lot more times than this. And, you know, Vince not
control freak.
You should have had at least the teams rolled out and the cities rolled out at the very least. All it seemed like was some of this, like, we're doing this and that's all I know. And you shouldn't hold a press conference until you have more information about everything, instead of like, yeah, we're going to have teams, or we're going to figure out the rules, or it's up to you for the rules, or it's up to you to the. It was like, well, we can bet on stuff. How does the betting work? We're figuring that out. That's not how you need to approach a business. If I approached a business like that and went to a meeting, I would get laughed out. But because Vince McMahon is Vince McMahon, he gets some reasonable time to figure it out.
Well, it's like what makes the NFL successful? Things like fantasy football. How do you integrate that? Can you integrate that? Will people?
There's eight teams. You can. It's like the CFL. You can't do a 10-team league because you can't. Every team can't have a quarterback.
Exactly. It's incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
What about things like you, for instance? I mean, you're a big Raiders fan, right? There'll be people who live in Oklahoma. They're a big fan of the Seahawks, you know, that even though they've never been to the city because somebody's a favorite player, and there's this type of fan.
Well, Mo, that's if you go to New York, the NFL. If they have a New York team, like they used to have the New York Hitmen, there's not going to be people in New York that are like, you know what, screw the Jets and the Giants, I'm becoming a fan of the XFL team out here. No, if you
know that won't happen, and you won't also have that. You won't have those people. Like you won't be. Unless you can get those people who are really passionate about the team and make that their team, it's not going to work. And part of that is people in the cities, but part of that is for the success of the NFL is that a person who is in a city who doesn't have a team, he loves football and he's picked a team. Like I say, I mean, you live here in Canada, but you're a huge Raiders fan.
Yeah.
And that means that you potentially will buy Raiders jerseys and these things. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be able to get that. They're not going to be able to find people who are incredibly passionate.
Go to San Diego. But, like, I don't know. So you go to San Diego, but those guys are still going to – it's going to be like when Baltimore had a CFL team and they won a Grey Cup and they were happy to have a Grey Cup and happy to have football back. But Baltimore wasn't really happy till they got the Ravens back. The Stallions were great, but when they got the Ravens back, they were really, really happy. And, you know, the CFL is a very solid league and it's been around and it knows what it's doing. But Baltimore wasn't happy just having the Stallions. It was like, okay, well, whatever. We lost our Colts, and that really sucks. And I guess we'll deal with the Stallions. We have football back, and we'll get integrated to this or whatever. But it's when they got the Ravens is when they were really happy because they had their football back. So San Diego or Oakland can have these second-rate football teams from the XFL that they're going to put into these stadiums, but they're not going to care unless they get an NFL franchise back.
And a team like, you know, a fan who's already a fan of the NFL or a fan of football – or a college fan in a city who doesn't have an NFL city like Columbus, why is it that they're going to sit there and go, okay, I'm going to become the fan of the Columbus whatever, if that's where a team is. I'm going to care more about them than I do about the I was already a huge I was already a huge Buckeyes fan.
Yeah.
Why am I going to care more about that? Like,
and that's why Oklahoma's not going to work either, because the Sooners mean more there. And if you go to Bama, they care more about the Crimson Tide. It's just the way it's integrated into those cities.
Exactly. There's so many reasons why this can't work. It's a horrible idea. And
if it was a developmental league, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. If they're like, if you went to Goodell and we're making this a developmental league, okay, I see the potential, because I look at the G League and the NBA, and that was kind of a joke at first.
That's what the World League of World League of American Football was supposed to be, and that didn't work.
Right. Okay.
Right.
And we don't even know if football is going to be around in 10 years with the concussions and all the bad stuff and precipice too. You're taking a gamble on this sport that less and less people want a part of.
It will be, because this will be safer.
All right.
I think you guys have kind of hit everything with this league and the many pitfalls. But I mean, you got to sit there, and we're going to know more. I hope we know more in a year. I do wonder if this is going to be like the Han Solo movie where.
Okay. Wait. Give me five things in wrestling. Not even outside of wrestling. You can't give me two outside of wrestling where Vince McMahon has been right and really been on it and been successful. You can't give me two things.
I go pro.
You can't give me two things he's done outside of wrestling that was a great success. Give me five things in the last 5 years that have been a Vince McMahon thing in wrestling that have worked.
The network. Okay. And I can't really think of anything else really.
You're really staticky there. I'm sorry. They said they'd have $2 million in the first year and $3 million after that.
Yeah.
They're nowhere near that. So you can't say that that's even the success that it is. I mean, if anything, it hasn't created revenues greater than they were before.
I think it hasn't been as much success as they thought it was, but I think we can all agree it's been a success.
I'll say it hasn't been an epic failure.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's my point with everything is, you know, I do wonder if this turns into a Han Solo situation where we haven't seen the trailer yet. We know that movie's coming up, but we haven't seen the trailer yet. I wonder if this is going to be something similar with the XFL, where they'll put out little fluff pieces and little puffs of smoke that you think something but really isn't. Not having any information 2 years out is not a good sign. And you're absolutely right. Vince knows wrestling, and I think that's as far as Vince's knowledge really goes, is professional wrestling. And I think wrestling's passed him by now. And I think we've seen it in the product that we talk about on a podcast. With the XFL, I think ultimately Vince's ego is going to kick in and he's going to be more involved. He said he's going to hire the right people to be involved, but Vince says he hires the right people for WWE and he is micromanaging it to death. So I think he's going to micromanage this, because you said this. This is his legacy.
He had Bailey, who anybody could have made money off of.
I don't want to go into examples of Vince's misses. We know the misses right now. We've got to cut this. We've got to come to
an end. Yeah, it's like 2 hours.
I think that. The biggest thing with all
of this. Super Bowl talk?
Pardon?
We'll do Super Bowl talk later this week. Because we're going way too long and I got a plane to catch.
All right, sounds good, guys.
I think ultimately that Vince, this is Vince's legacy on the line, and I don't know if this is going to work, but I mean, we are 2 years away. We haven't seen the full framework of everything. All we've gotten is the basic information. Here's the gist of it. We've got a plot synopsis to a movie. Whether the movie is shit or not, we will see. And we will find out. We will find out before the first kickoff of that. I think we'll have a very good idea where this is going to go. But right now, it's just kind of wait and see. And anything, this just proves that Vince would be a psychologist's dream, just to visit his mind and see what it's like. Being John Malkovich? No. Being Vincent Kennedy McMahon, that's the movie that we want to see.
There you go.
There you go. And no joke this week. If I wanted a joke this week, I'd...
I got a joke for you. Kelly wore a sweater down to the Rumble.
Kelly.
It was cold.
I was gonna say if I wanted a joke this week, I'd follow you into the washroom, Josh, and watch you take a leak.
I thought you've already done that.
Probably. Yeah.
I will say we are gonna be on no short of worst woman wrestler this year after the Royal Rumble tonight. There's some easy candidates we can go to. We can just be nostalgic and just get a Kelly in there.
Troy Wilson's dropkick was some bad.
All right, guys.
I was wondering if we're going to see Candice Michelle or not. I'm like, oh, God, can we just get the trifecta of shit all in this Rumble together?
When they said Kelly was a former champion, I'm like, there's burying your title.
Yeah, I really wanted Layla to come out with Michelle McCool. I was really hoping Layla would come out, but no dice. Finish on that. Okay. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this long, interesting podcast with Mo sounding staticky and me cutting in and out. So until next time, cheers and enjoy the day, people.